two sheets. One more. All right, now, I want you to know that the most frustrating thing for me, of course, is going to be that I'm going to have to try and get an hour and a quarter into about 55 minutes. Now, that's not easy for me, but on the contrary, it may very well be, what do I want to say?
Beneficial.
Maybe good for me, beneficial, that's it. It may very well be beneficial. There are a number of announcements that I want to make before the beginning of class. First of all, I want to wish you all that you should have a successful and healthy year of Torah study, and that we should be zocheh to shalom al yisrael. We have to pray for the peace of Israel. We're going through an extremely difficult time. Number two, and maybe that's number one. The shiurim this morning are dedicated to the memory of a dear friend, Avram Silver, Oliver Shalom. His son Jeffrey is with us this morning. He passed away 3 years ago, a young man who was just on the threshold of becoming truly a leader in the Orthodox Jewish community, a warm man with a deep love of Torah and love of Eretz Yisrael, and a great philanthropist and father to 3 children. And he, at a very young age, he passed away, was certainly a loss to the Jewish community. My relationship to Avram Oliver Shalom goes back long years ago when he was a student of mine in Toronto, and he ultimately was the one who dedicated the shul in Harnof, in which I serve as rabbi, which is called Kehilat Zichron Yosef, after his father. And his son, Solange Yavin, who's with us this morning, his name is Yosef, named after the Crusader. In Yes Hashem, if all other things being equal, we hope that in a year or so from now, we will be in our own home, a home that will be dedicated in memory of Avram Silva, Oliver Shalom. I mean, we've been here long enough. I think it's about time we move on to bigger and better things. He was a dear. All the information you will get when time is up. He was a very, very fine human being with a deep, deep feeling for Eretz Yisrael. All right, to Hegnish Matotz Rudabit Sarachim Zola, he should be on Eretz Yosef for his 3 children and his wife, Solange Yavin, and Yet Hashem, she's going to be making the bar mitzvah of their youngest in 3 weeks from now. But we also have with us this morning Olim or Olot Chadashot and potential Olot Chadashot. And you know, we do have a very warm place in our heart for Olim of all sorts. Now, what I understand is it Highland Park? Highland Park, are you from Highland Park? And your last name is Israel? And your first name? Rhonda Israel, from Highland Park, New Jersey. Where are you living now? In Modi'in. Welcome to Eretz Yisrael. You and your family should have a Yishuv Tov here in this country. We need more people like you. We need loads of them right now. To come at a time like this is a source of great encouragement to us. In addition to the fact that I always like to quote, and I just was sitting with him last night, a friend of mine, Chaim Waxman, who is a sociologist, and he wrote a book on American Aliyah some years ago where he described American Olim as free migrants of an innovative nature. Now, that's 4 fancy words to describe a meshugana. Free migrants of an innovative nature, and of all things, we were sitting at a wedding last night, and Chaim Waxman was uncle to the cousin. I didn't know that he was going to sit by my table, but I told him, I told all the people by my table, Chaim Waxman's great definition of American Olim, free migrants of an innovative nature. 2 minutes later, Chaim Waxman comes to sit down right next to me. The whole table looks at him and I say, okay, what's an American Olim? And the whole table goes, free migrants of an innovative nature. I don't think he stopped laughing. He's been laughing all night. So we wish you greatest of success. And then we have, from Toronto, trying it out. Alyssa, did I get it right? Hirschkopf? Okay. Try it. It's good. It certainly is good when you try it. It's when you come for real that it gets a little rough. That's when it gets a little rough. But it's always interesting, that's for sure. Unfortunately, there's never a dull moment here. How many times have I said, especially since you've come from Canada, how many times have I said, I say it in my shul, Yehidatzam ulifnei Avinu may be in the will of God, that Eretz Yisrael should be as boring as Canada. You can leave Canada for a year and come back a year later and nothing happened. I'm wondering now, I haven't heard the news since 8 o'clock. Wer weiß noch what's going to be on the news. If you miss 1 hour of the news, you're finished. That's all, it's all over. You just missed a major segment of life. But we would like it to be a great deal more boring over here. First year, Parashat Bereshit. On the sheet in front of you, you have the psukim that we're going to deal with. The psukim we're going to deal with are going to be shattering. We're talking about, you know, somebody asked me a little while ago, it was you, Kim. Like, they always know the beginning of a parasha, and nobody ever knows the end of the parasha. He said, I should start from the end of the parasha. So I did the middle of the parasha. Parashat Bereshit, of course, begins. It's so serene, it's so beautiful. I mean, we talk about the Big Bang, but we weren't there to hear the Big Bang. The world comes into creation. God says, let there be this and let there be that, and it all happens. And this tranquility of Gan Eden, Garden of Eden, everything is in harmony. It's all so beautiful. By the end of the parasha, we come to a world that is all full of violence. The whole world, from the harmony, the peace, the tranquility of the beginning of the Seder, to the end of the Seder, we're talking about a world that is in absolute chaos. There are a few stages that lead to it. Stage one, of course, is the fact that first man and first woman deny the one mitzvah, deny God the one mitzvah that they were given. The moment that there's a rejection of God, anything can happen after that. And we're going to see one of the profound tragedies that happens, and we're going to analyze it. I think there's a great deal and great deal to learn from it. And the fact is that I just decided I want to study these few psukim well. There may be a number of things, and through no fault of my own, that are of extreme contemporary significance and relevance. Let's read the psukim. V'ha'adam yada et chava ishto. Adam knew his wife Chava, and of course the word yada we've talked about in the past represents a real deep, significant, and meaningful relationship between Adam and Chava. It's not the way we usually understand it as, you know, some kind of a way of saying something that Torah doesn't want to say. It's a little squeamish about saying that they engaged in relations. It says he knew her. No, it's a definition of the relationship. The relationship was a relationship of knowing, indeed knowing one another. Batar v'telet et Kain, she was pregnant, she gave birth to Kain. V'tomen, she said, Koniti ish et Hashem. I have acquired a man with God. I mean, we've become partners. We have become partners in the creation. This is the first act of creation in which man is involved. Man has produced for the first time in history another man. Tosef Loledet at Achiv, and she continued and she gave birth to his brother at Hevel. I think that we should take note of the number of times brother is used in the parasha. I really don't understand, why does it have to say that she gave birth to his brother? I mean, if you say that she gave birth to Hevel, well, then we know Hevel is a brother. It seems important in the Torah to tell us that she gave birth to his brother, to Hevel. Vayehi Hevel Roed son Hevel was a shepherd with Cain, Haya Oved Adama, and Cain worked the land. He was involved in agriculture. Vayehi Miketz Yamin, and it came to pass after the end of a certain period of time, Vayaveh Cain Mipri Adama Minchol Hashem, Cain brought from the fruit of the earth, he brought a gift to God, a carpet. Vehevel Hevi Gamhu. Hevel also brought mibecharotzono from the very best of his sheep and from the fatty parts of them. Vayisha Hashem el Hevel vel minchato, and God turned to Hevel and to his sacrifice, to his gift. What's important to note, of course, is the fact that the one who initiates it, and for that matter, it may seem the one who discovers the idea of sacrifice. Say the spiritual genius, and something like that is how the Ramban describes Cain. Cain was obviously a person of great spiritual depth. It was he who initiated a sacrifice to God. Hevel hevi gamhu. Hevel was an also. He also brought. Who set the stage? And who followed the leader? The leader, and the one who set the stage, was obviously Cain. Hevel is the one who follows it. But something happens over here, something goes wrong. If something goes wrong, as we look at the simple meaning of the psukim, and Rashi points that out, since it says that Hevel brought the very best of his sheep, that already tells us that whatever it was that Cain brought was not necessarily the best. A few tomatoes and a few, not necessarily the best tomatoes, like already a little gekvetched tomatoes, and he didn't bring the very best. He didn't see that as something of significance, whereas Hevel, though he follows the lead of Cain, but he understands that which you bring before God has to be of the very best. Vayisha Hashem el Hevel ben Chato, God turned toward Hevel, to El Minchato, toward Hevel and his sacrifice. Vel Cain vel Minchato lo sha'a, and God did not turn to Cain and his sacrifice. Vayichal Cain ma'od, Cain was very angry. Vayiplu panav, and his face was fallen. He became very, very depressed. Obviously, we must assume, how do they know, how does God demonstrate that he has accepted the sacrifice of Cain, of Hevel and not of Cain? Most probably that fire came down from heaven and consumed it. So Cain is very angry. Vayichal Cain ma'od, vayitlu panam. Hayom Hashem al Cain, God said to Cain, Loma chora loch, why are you so angry? V'loma naflu fanecha, why are you so depressed? Listen. If there's something that you did that was wrong, if you didn't achieve the fullness of service of God, there's always another chance. You can always do tshuva. Here he's being told, there's always the possibility corrected. There's always a tomorrow, for that matter. There's even today. Hello, Intete. If you will be good, Seit, God is going to carry your sin and forgive it. Vim lo tete. But if you're not going to mend your ways, La petach chatat roveitz. There is the sin. It's right there before you, at the door. It's crouched. The Satan, the Yetzirah, is waiting there to pounce upon you. Ve'ilecho tshukato. The fact is that you have a desire for that Yetzirah, but you have the ability to rule over him. Va'atotim sholpo. You can rule over him. Man is capable. Man is capable of reigning in his own animal nature. Here comes, of course, the tragedy. This is the pasuk. This pasuk is the tragedy. This is a pasuk we're going to have to understand. We're going to need background to understand it. But here it is. The horrible thing happens right here. Ayomek Kayin el Hevel Achiv, and it's an unusual pasuk. Just let's read the pasuk first. And Cain said to his brother Hevel, "Vayehi b'hiyotam basaden." It came to pass when they were in the field. Vayakam Cain el Hevel achiv. Cain got up against his brother Hevel. Vayahargeyu, and he killed him. The first act of murder. We're talking about the first generation of man. The first man born on the face of this earth commits the horrible act of murder. I mean, it's like, when you start to think about it, it's just, it's awesome, it's frightening. Now, first of all, what is the most significant textual problem in this passage? Huh? What does he say? What a strange passage. Vayomer Kayin el Hevel Achiv. Kayin said to his brother Hevel. What did he say? It doesn't say it in the passage. You know, I like to make my grandiose sweeping statements. There is no other passage like this in all of Tanakh. Did you notice me going through all of Tanakh in the blink of an eye? There is no pasuk like this. Nothing similar to it. Vayomer Kayin el Hevel Achiv. Kayin said to his brother Hevel. So what did he say? Why does he kill him? And just because you're angry with somebody, you kill him? I mean, murder. I mean, very difficult to understand in the final analysis, regardless of whatever we say, we will still not be able to understand how a human being can take the life of another human being. One of the approaches, Vayomer Kayin el Hevel Achiv, said it some years ago, in a completely different context. The pasuk doesn't tell us what Kayin said to Hevel, because it makes absolutely no difference what Kayin said to Hevel. What the pasuk wants to point out over here is, regardless of all the talk, there really is no communication. It makes no difference to tell you what they're talking about. You can see people talking to each other, meeting, negotiating, discussing all sorts of things, blood dotting their I's, crossing their T's, and it seems to the observer as though, wow, there's a great deal of discussion going on over here. There's real dialogue. These people are getting to know each other. They're getting to like each other. Getting to feel free and easy. And the fact is, nothing is happening. It only looks as though there's communication. But there's no communication at all. They're not talking to each other. And over here, it's not the two of them. It's only Kayin. Vayomer Kayin el Hevel Achiv. Kayin is talking to Hevel, but he's not really talking to Hevel. He's talking at him. He has no interest in communicating with him. He despises him. So while from an external point of view it looks as though boy, there's great deal of discussion, intensive discussion, there's no talking going on. I wonder how much of communication between human beings is really all talk but no real communication. We are most probably the generation that has available more means of communication than was ever available. The fact is, you have to be a shtickle genius to know how to communicate. First of all, how to communicate with the present means. I'm still trying to learn how to do an email. I know that sounds very primitive to you, but I tell you the truth. I was upset with faxes, you know, when faxes first came in. Because there was something like, if you get a fax, like you have to answer immediately. I don't want to answer immediately. How do you like that? And somebody leaves a message. Sometimes I check my tacoli, and that sweet voice tells me Yesh lecha shivim ushmona hodaot. 78. Yeah. So that means it's going to take me at least a week just to get them off the. Let alone answer them. Now we have all sorts of sophisticated means of communication. We can call anybody at any moment, at any time. But doesn't necessarily mean that the quality of communication is any different than the quality of communication that took place between Kayin and Hevel. And the unique and beautiful way in which Torah tells us this is by this unusual pasuk that Torah expects that this pasuk is going to stop us in our tracks. Vayomer Kayin el Hevel Achiv. Kayin said to his brother Hevel, and we're waiting there with great anticipation, and knew what did he say? And nothing. Because that's the truth. It was nothing. Makes no difference. He may have spoken about who knows what. It means nothing, because no communication is taking place. When you can kill, there's no communication. And there's no such thing as communicating while killing is going on. There is no communication. B'yor HaChayim HaKadosh will blow your mind. It blew mine. Because B'yor HaChayim HaKadosh also wants to know, what does it mean Kayin said to his brother? And by the way, it's a little strange. He doesn't seem to be in the mood to be speaking to a brother. Why does the brother say, Vayomer Kayin? Kayin said to Hevel Achiv. When he comes to talk to him now, he cometh not as a brother. He comes as a deadly enemy. Can we say that Kayin is truly a brother? What kind of brother? So first, let's take Arachayim 2, number 2, and then number 3. Number 2, he deals with the word Achiv that I pointed out to you at the birth of Hevel, it says, and she gave birth to Achiv Hevel, his brother Hevel. So the Arachayim says, you know, that's where there's the piece that's a little, off on a tangent over there, right? I can't always get them straight, you know that. Tam shehutzrach lomer et Achiv lelot zarech, the reason why Torah had to say the word his brother, lelot zarech, it seems to be unnecessary. Gam hedich lomer pa'amim teivat ach. You'll see. A number of other times, Torah is going to use the word ach. Brother, Yidbar, this will become clear, al derech omram zal, because our rabbi said, ki acha shenotzach hevel kayin, vihipilo, richem olav hevel, vekom me olav, v'acharkach kom kayin, v'harakal. The picture that we always have in our mind is, Kayin is the older of the brothers, he's stronger, and therefore Kayin simply has absolutely no difficulty in killing Hevel. Arachayim says no. The stronger one of the two, and we will prove it from the Pesukim, the stronger one of the two is Hevel. When Kayin attacks Hevel, Hevel strikes back in self-defense. There are people like that. No, there is such a thing. The first person on the face of this earth who was attacked responded by defending himself. Not only he responded by defending himself, it was Hevel who brought Kayin to his feet down upon the ground. He had him. He was counting to 10. It was a knockout. Kayin was finished. The aggressor was shattered. What happened afterwards was that Hevel got up, and at a moment when Hevel wasn't expecting it, Kayin emerged again, rose, and killed him. A moment of being unaware, a moment that he was unalert, a moment at which he thought he had won the war. Why is he not alert? Hevel, you've just vanquished your attacker. Why was he not alert? What happened in those crucial seconds? Huh? What? No, wait. Let's see what the Arachayim says. So he says, Vuhu Sheramas. So the Arachayim said, the reason why they had to tell us the word brother is in order to explain this, that after Hevel had been victorious over Kayin and brought him to the ground, Richem Olav, he had mercy. Hevel had mercy. Poor Kayin. And then the moment that Kayin saw that he can rise, he rose, and he killed him. So he says, "V'husha ramaz bi'omer et achiv." That's what the Torah wants to point us out to us when the Torah says his brother. Ki nohag hu im kayin b'midat ha'achva. Hevel's terrible mistake was that he treated Cain like a brother. And because he treated him like a brother, he had great... There was a moment he was overcome and overwhelmed with mercy on his dear brother. And that was his undoing. Ki nohagim Cain b'midat ha'achva k'nizga. Abul Cain nohagim yam v'lo achva. But Cain conducted himself with Hevel without any restraints of brotherhood. And that made all the difference. That made all the difference. Ula say hifsik be'et bet. What he means is, it says, Patosef laledet et achav et Hevel v'yihi Hevel ro'et son v'Cain hoya oved. Oved Adam Ha. And then it says, Vayihi bihi yotam basadeh, that two people are locked in struggle. One is overwhelmed by a sense of brotherhood, and the other is not. Now watch, let's just go to the next Arachayim. It's going to be speaking about the Pasuk. Pasuk 8. Vayomet Cain el Hevel Achiv. What was our question on this pasuk? Our question was, what did he say to him? You know how the Baruch Haim learns this pasuk? Vayomet Cain el Hevel. You know what Cain said to Hevel? Achiv! That's what he said to him. He talked to him about brotherhood. He talked to him about friendship. He talked to him about a new relationship in this part of the world together, me and you. Vayomet Cain el Hevel. Cain said to Hevel, brother, we're brothers. That was the moment. That was the moment at which Hevel was no longer on guard. Lost his sense of being alert and aware. And watch, we still have to prove that Hevel was the younger, was the stronger of the two, because the pasuk says, "Vayihi biyotam basadeh," when they were in the field, "Vayokom Cain." It says Cain got up. It means where was Cain before he got up? Cain was down. But "Vayomer Cain el Hevel," Cain said to Hevel, "Achiv, we're brothers, brotherhood." Look at the words of the Arachayim. Amalo Dvar Achva, he told him things of brotherhood. Litzad shekodem elav sibas hasina machmas kina. Because what happened before was there was hatred. What did the hatred come from? Jealousy. And we remember we learned the Meshech Chachma that all hatred comes from jealousy. Yargish Hevel. When Hevel, or would Hevel have understood that Cain really hates him, he would have been on guard. He would have watched himself. Ashar Alkein Omar Elov Ha'achva. Therefore, Cain speaks to him about brotherhood. Kilo Nolad Belivo Sino Machmas Hadava. Litzad kinato. So he says, "No, I don't. I'm not really jealous of you. I mean, there were misunderstandings, and you know, we can straighten everything out." V'hit ohu k'dei lahamin bo. It was all planned. It was mamish all planned. He planned to fool him. He planned to lull him into a sense of brotherhood. He wanted him to believe him, l'tachlit kavarato, so that he should be able to fulfill his intention, l'hapilo, to bring him down. The whole point was to bring him down. How did he do it? How did he kill him? Now, you, of course, I... let's say that I'm not making any contemporary comments. I leave all of that to your own fertile imagination. Anything you think I'm talking about is exactly what I'm talking about. Now, if we have time, we'll get back to Targum Yonatan, which is number 5. The Targum Yonatan, I don't know if we'll have enough time, and I have to see how to do things over here. But if you just take the whole Targum Yonatan is describing, now he creates a conversation. He has a whole conversation that he works out, that they are debating matters of theology, philosophy, belief, until it reaches a point where Cain says, led din veled dayon, there is no law and there is no judge, which means he rejects God because he's been hurt by God. You understand, the same God to which he was the genius who discovered the idea of sacrifice, he now turns into God's enemy. He's angry with God. And because he's angry with God, he rejects him. So here, Targum Yonatan describes a whole conversation, back and forth, what Cain said, what Hevel said, what Hevel said, what Cain said. But when the moment came, the last line in Targum Yonatan, it's a little bit underlined, V'tova avna b'mitzche v'katle. He killed him with a stone. Stones can kill. A stone, a rock in his head. Tova avna b'mitzche v'katle. A rock. In other words, not only rocks can kill, rocks happen to have been the first implement of war. Before man, I imagine this is there's the Stone Age. What's the difference between the Stone Age and the Bronze Age? In the Stone Age, they killed with stones. In the Bronze Age, I imagine they killed with bronze. I don't know. I imagine we're back in the Stone Age. We are back.
Not everyone.
Not everyone. There are those who are in the Bronze Age. But it also means, I mean, it's significant. There's no question about it. It's significant if Targum Yonatan says that. What to me is significant is with the tens or hundreds of thousands of stones and the tens of thousands of rounds of bullets that had been shot, fired, and the number of korbanot on our side is so small. This is there's a Rabbeinu Shleilam that is sending those rocks and stones in all sorts of different ways. But this is serious business. First man killed by a rock. First act of murder. What's amazing is, I always like to quote a Meshech Chachma. A Meshech Chachma says something over here that at first glance it may seem to be like so out to left field, but it's not out to left field. I think it's a deeper, a profound human insight. Number 4. Vayomer Kayin el Hevel Achiv. Now I'm going to read it because every time I read this Meshech Chachma, I see something new in it. He's obviously dealing with the same pasuk, the swing pasuk, the classic pasuk. Kayin said to Hevel. So what did Kayin say to Hevel? Now you can hear something that's presented here by the Meshech Chachma that really is a little strange, but then ultimately it's not so strange. Yitochen, it's possible ki Kayin Omer Alibo. Cain said to himself, I imagine, Vayomer Cain el Hevel Achiv, the Meshech Chachma is reading it in the following way. Cain said to himself, El Hevel Achiv, it's about my brother Hevel. According to the Meshech Chachma, Cain is not speaking to Hevel, so then we don't have... We no longer have the problem of what did Cain say to Hevel. He's not talking to him. But Vayomer Cain, Cain's talking to himself. He's thinking over the situation. He's making a reassessment. He's taken out a pesek zman, taking a little time in order to reassess the situation as he sees it. And listen to the conclusion that he arrives at. The conclusion is not, I don't know whether the word is amazing. It sounds like an act of extreme madness. He had just heard God say to him, Eilecho, to you, Shukato is his desire, Va'atot Timshovo, and you will rule over him. When I read the pasuk, I said to you what the pshat that everybody says in it, that Hashem is telling him, the Yetzirah, Satan wants to get you, your evil inclination, Eilecho, Shukato, it's after you, he desires you, he wants to destroy you. But man is strong, Va'atot Timshovo, you can rule over him. Meshech Chochmah says that Cain is thinking this over, and he says, "Nah, you know what the Rebbe Yishim meant? The Rebbe Yishim told him, Eilecho, your brother Hevel, his desire is to destroy you, Va'atot Timshovo, but you will rule over him." Do you understand what he's convinced himself? He has convinced himself that God is not, you know, like the rabbi who makes a sermon about people talking in shul, and during the whole sermon he's looking directly at the guy who does more of the talking than anybody else in shul. And of course this guy comes over to him after davening and says, Rabbi, did you give them the works today? That was good. In other words, nicht mich meint man, doesn't mean me. God is speaking very clearly to Cain, and do you know what Cain decides? El hevel achiv. That's what he meant. He's talking about Hevel, that Hevel wants to do me in, but Va'atot Timshovo, you can rule over him. He's talking, it's possible, Ki Kayin Omar Alibo, Kayin said to himself, Shekavoras Hashem Yizbarach Bidvaro, the intent of God when he said, Ve'lecho Tshukato, to you he desires. He desires you, Va'atot Timshovo, and you will rule over him. Shekiven El Hevel Achiv. God is talking about Hevel. He's letting him in. You know, he's getting first-hand information from God that Hevel wants to destroy him. Shehevel mishtalkeik elav la'abdo ulachido min ha'olam, that Hevel wants to destroy him and remove him from the world. But God tells Cain, you will rule over him. Hainu shekayin yinshalalav. This is a great prophecy that Cain, you will rule over Hevel. He didn't explain that God's words were intended to him and his desire to do evil. No, nicht mich meint man. They don't mean me, they mean him. He didn't understand it that God is talking about him. That's what it means. Cain said to his brother Hevel, Shama Belibo, he said in his heart, I figured out, I now deciphered God's message to me. It's about my brother Hevel. And therefore he says, now we can understand when God is going to turn a few psukim later to Hevel, to Cain, and he says to him, Kol d'mei achicha, the voice of the blood of your brother, Tzoakim Eli, is crying out to me. So the Meshech Chochmah says, you know why Hevel's blood is crying out to me, God? Because I said something that Cain was able to misinterpret. I'm partially guilty. I should have made it clear to him. I mean you. Told him, Achichat Sarkim Eli, Yirtse Shehu Bidvarav Kiviyachol. Hevel's blood is accusing God, so to speak. Godam the Charat Apo shall Cain al Hevel. You caused Cain's anger against Hevel. What I take out of this Meshech Chochmah, it may seem a little far-fetched. It does explain the words Kol Demei Achicha, the voice of your brother's blood, Tzoakim Eli, is calling out unto me. But the Meshech Chochmah is saying something else, and something that we've talked about often in the past. Everybody sees events and words precisely as they wish to see them. Nothing is going to change. It's very rare that people are going to change. Perception is functionally selective. Or cognitive dissonance? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? A jihad? No, a jihad of peace. To wage the war for peace is not what Paris said 5 years ago. Yeah, what are you talking about? You know, you hear one thing, and you're just interpreting, nay, nicht mean mich, meint me. Nobody means me. I mean, the other great statement, should I say Pshat in Arafat's command to Barak? Told him exactly where to go. Told him exactly where to go. They must have thought that Reise, he's telling him to go to paradise or something, you know. Man, the human mind has a tremendous amount of difficulty, assimilating that which we don't believe in. The reality can be pounding upon us, and it makes a difference. There is a magnificent essay by Chaim Shmulevitz, who was Mashgiach in the Mir Yeshiva, where he uses Cain as one of the classic examples of a person who was inhabited by light and darkness at the same time. And that becomes terribly confusing. Yes, it's possible for light and darkness to inhabit the same human being at the same time, and therefore what it really means is that we're going to be dealing with a person who's going to be terribly, terribly confused. Because remember, who was the one that originated the idea of sacrifice? Who was the one that felt that sacrifice is something that would be accepted by God? That was Cain, his spiritual genius. And the same spiritual genius becomes a killer afterwards. Light and darkness inhabit the same human being at the same time. One can be brilliant, therefore, in one area and absolutely non-brilliant. And that's an understatement in another area. There's no raya, nothing to prove that because one is a great military commander that he has to be a great political leader. It doesn't mean that somebody who is a great doctor has to therefore be a great human being and a humanitarian. Cain is he's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Or Vachoshech can inhabit the same space at the same time. I just want to get one medrash done. Because I know that I have to move with speed. Medrash number one. Vayomer Cain el Hevel Achiv Vayi B'Yotam Basadeh. The medrash on this pasuk. Cain said to his brother Hevel. So the medrash also wants to deal with the same question. What did Cain say to Hevel? I think we're up to our fourth answer now. The medrash, fourth or fifth, the Medrash says that there was a real conversation. Amaham hayu medainim. What were they talking about? What were they dealing with? Amru, they said, bo nechalekat ha'olam, let's divide the world. Echad notal ha'sakarkos, ve'ech notal ha'amataltim. So one of them took land, and the other took the movable objects of the world. Dein amar, so therefore the one who had the land said, the land that you're standing on belongs to me. Dein aro, dat koyim alei didi. Shali, the land that you stand on is mine. The day Omar and the other said, Madat Lovish, what you're wearing, that's the D, it's mine. Mashatalove, Shali, Dain Omar Chalots. So he said, one said to the other, take that garment off. And the other one said, Prach, fly away, get off this land. The land is mine. Now, there was an equal division. They understood that you can't divide. Give one of them all the land and one all of the movable objects. Each one got half the real estate and half of the movable objects. Elzeh Amar, you know what the machloket was that brought to murder? One of them said, "Bitumi Beit Hamikdash Yibaneh." On my land, the Beit Hamikdash will be built. Har Habayit Biyadi. Elzeh Amar, and the other said, Bitumi Beit HaMikdash Yibaneh. They were fighting about Har HaBayit. The first war in history was about Har HaBayit. Because it said, how do we know? How does Medrash know this?
Shenana, because it says Vayihi biyotam basedeh, when they were in the field. What's called the field? Vein sodeh lo Beit HaMikdash. Sodeh is the Beit HaMikdash. Dichtiv pasuk in Micha, Tzion sodeh teichoresh. Tzion will be plowed under like a field. Umitoch kach. When you fight about the Makom HaMikdash, it's going to end up by Yakum Kayin El Hevel Achiv Vayargeu. That's the second opinion. The third opinion was Yehuda Baravami Omer. Yehuda Baravami said Al Chava HaRishono HaYumidainim. Strange, yet an element of truth. They were fighting about who will have Chava. Chava was most probably the most beautiful woman, I was going to say, ever born, but she wasn't born, created, and they both wanted Chava. So what? Wait a minute. The Medrash therefore is saying, in its own terms, the Medrash is saying, one, the machloket that brought to the bloodshed was over economics, mine and yours, yours and mine. Remember, the Medrash has to be understood in its broader terms. What does the Medrash mean? Economics. That's what brings about war and death and destruction. The second chapter in the Medrash says religion is the cause of the great wars. And the third says, yes, the struggle over woman becomes that which causes one man to kill fellow man. Or that's it. The Medrash was very, very clear. One final thing. I feel so pressed by time. On the other side, you see, I'm going to have to learn how to time myself. Unless, of course, I'm just going to have these classes running the whole day. Give Rabbi Adler 2 hours, me 2 hours, Rabbi Gordon 5 hours. Because Rambam is bigger than all. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi talks at great length about this struggle that took place between Kayin and Hevel over the Makom HaMikdash. That's where the war really began. And that was, well, we won't have the episode. I just want to tell you that this is his approach. The Shem Yishmur that I have over there goes deeper into the personalities of Kayin and Hevel. And I'm going to do something I would never do with a Shem Yishmur or a Meshech Chachma. In one sentence, I'm going to tell you what the Shem Yishmur says. These were two personalities who were two opposites. Kayin had an exaggerated self-image of himself. The one who acquires everything, the whole world, is his. What's Hevel? Nothing. Hevel havolim, amar kaholet hakol Hevel. Hevel saw himself as good, he's nothing with nothing. Both extremes were destructive. The one who is as conceited as Kayin and though he feels the whole world is his will ultimately be a killer. And the Hevel who is so humble and so controlled is the one who's asking to be killed. You have to be someplace in the middle. You can't be with an exaggerated sense of your own power, your might, and you also will never be able to survive in this Kayin eat Hevel world if you're going to walk around with a sense that shoot at me and I won't do anything. An exaggerated sense of Hevelhood is extremely disturbing. And the only thing I say that I have really, my great complaint is we don't have a tank in Har Nof. I think yes. We, because as much as the tank is doing in Gilo, it could be sitting in Har Nof too. I'm sure all the kids would have loads of fun with the tank. That we should have Shalom al Yisrael. Okay, you have a 7 minute break. That's it until 10 after, and Rabbi Gordon begins at 10 after. I'm sorry. I'm so